Williamsport Area Transportation Study, MPO, Technical Committee, meeting for March or May 23rd, 2022. We're going to call to order the meeting at 10:04 a.m. Can everybody hear me? Do you want me to speak louder or am I good?
Loud and clear on my end.
Yeah. Clear, Carrie. Okay, thank you. All right, so the first item on the agenda today, first off, I want to say this meeting is being recorded on Microsoft Teams for meeting minute purposes. So if anyone objects to that, please say so now. If not, we'll move on to the agenda. You should have got an agenda from the email from Sal. Also was attached to the meeting minute notice. If anyone doesn't have the agenda, we can have Sal send it to you again. First agenda item are the meeting minutes from February 28, 2022, Technical Committee meeting. Have any questions on the minutes? Hearing none, we'll have a motion to accept the minutes and present it.
Joe Reicher, motion.
Thank you, Joe. Do I have a second?
Todd Reicher, second.
Todd, thank you. Any questions on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, no opposed. Motion passes. We actually forgot an item here. Sal is just going to do a quick roll call. He'll say your name, and then you can just say if you're here or not.
Hi, everybody. So, Carrie, obviously you're here. Gerald, it looks like you're on the line.
Yes.
Joe, I know you're here. Todd, it looks like you're on the line.
Yes.
Richard, I see you're on the line.
Yes.
Skip, I know you're on. We spoke a little bit ago.
Gene,
it looks like you're on the line.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. So in the room with me here is myself, obviously, then Mark Morawski, Scott Williams, Austin Daly. Looks like Dan Merck is on the line.
Yeah.
And then I see we have Barb Schmouder.
Brenda.
And Bob Brown.
Yep, I'm here.
And it looks like Elizabeth Bowman?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Did I miss anybody? I don't think so. Okay.
That's Hi, everything. John. I just agree attending for a first game.
Hi, John. And then real quick, can everybody see the agenda up? I shared screen, so you should be able to see that. Can everyone see that okay?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay, thank you, Sal. Next agenda item, public comment. Anybody from the public that'd like to offer any comment at this time? Okay, we'll cover that again at the end, so if anyone calls in or anyone thinks of anything they want to talk about, we can cover that here at the end of the meeting. We're going to move on to some action items. The first action item is going to be covered by Scott Williams. It's the 2022-2024 UPWP CSDT Implementation Amendment, the reaffirmation of an e-ballot.
Thank you, Carrie. So this is the e-ballot that was sent out. When was that all about?
It was March 7th.
Okay. So it was March 7th that first went out. It was approved by Tech Committee and Coordinating Committee. So the background on this was we did our CSDT implementation impact study. We got really good recommendations out of it, a good path moving forward, but, I mean, we're looking at a lot of impact across three counties. There's a lot of coordination that's going to go into that, and we really didn't want to do the study and have it be one of those, you know, it's a nice spiral-bound thing that's up on a shelf somewhere, like, you know, we can pat ourselves on the back. Hey, we did a study, you know, we actually want to implement this thing and keep moving on it and make sure that as many things that are contained in that study are implemented in our community to make sure that we're prepared for CSBT opening up. So we pursued additional funding to keep our consultant on for 2 more years to assist in those efforts. And we were successful. Thank you, Central Office. Thank you, Gary, for your help in putting that proposal together. So we're going to get an additional $75,000 a year for 2 years to pay for consultant support services to help in doing an implementation task force that's going to be composed of representatives of all the impacted communities from the opening of CSBT, as well as other stakeholders. And so just help us stay coordinated on where we're at with projects, if there is any assistance that we need to do, if there are any projects that then we need to look at the program on the tip so that we're staying coordinated on that. So that's the intent. In order to add this funding, we had to amend our work program. So this is the same work program that we worked on developing last fall. The committee adopted it then, or approved it then, and so we're adopting it. This actually, this new work program doesn't take effect until July 1st of this year, so we're still amending it before it actually takes effect. So the action that we're requesting is just to reaffirm that e-ballot vote that was taken back in March.
Do we have any questions for Scott? Hearing none, do I hear a motion for reaffirm the e-ballot?
This is Richard, I move.
Thank you, Richard. Do I have a second?
This is Gerald, second.
Thank you, Gerald. Any questions on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Scott. Next item is going to be the Watts MPO recommendation letter designating River Valley Transit Authority, RVTA. That's going to be covered by Todd Wright. Todd?
Hello, Todd, can you hear us?
Is he still on there still?
He's on there, yeah.
But he may be muted. You can tell if he's still muted if you look on that.
He's having technical difficulties. He just messaged us.
Okay, well, we can just move ahead then. We'll do the next item. We'll come back to Todd on that.
Okay.
So we'll move forward to the Watts Draft 2023-2026 Transportation Improvement Program, also known as the TIP, Recommendation Coordinating Committee to adopt. That'll be covered by Sal Dinko. Sal?
Thanks, Gary. Good morning, everyone. So, as you know, we're updating the 2023-2026 TIP. We had a draft out for public comment. Public comment period was April 5th through May 5th of this year. We discussed the TIP at a number of public meetings, the October Technical Committee and November Coordinating Committee meetings, the February Tech and March Coordinating Committee meetings this year, and then May and June Tech and Coordinating Committees this year. We also did presentations at the Lycoming County Commissioners meetings in April, and again also the Planning Commission meeting on the 21st. We had a public hearing on April 25th, Monday evening. The public notice went in the Sun Gazette 3 different times, once in March, once in April, once in May. We had about 39 or 40 different social media posts regarding different components of the draft TIP, ranging from just the public comment notice, the timeline, funding, all sorts of different things. There was a number of different mailings that went out to our interested parties list as well, seeking feedback. We did get a number of responses from the public. Some were from PennDOT Central Office, some were from local residents, and we also had a request from PennDOT Bureau of Transit as well. Those were all incorporated into the draft tip. I believe it's Appendix K, the summary of public comment, where Watts NPO had authority or purview. We addressed those questions. Most of them I did push on to other entities, whether it be a municipality or PennDOT or RVT or someone like that. So the request this morning here is to recommend to the coordinating committee to adopt the 2023-2026 draft tip at the June 13th coordinating committee meeting. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Have any questions for Sal? I just want to say, before we have any motions, I just want to thank, you know, Chris King and District 3 people that worked on the TIP program. It's a lot of work to put it together, and I also like to thank all the Watts MPO staff for helping it, put it together also. There's a lot that goes into this document. So I just want to thank everyone that was involved. A lot of hard work, and thank you.
It is a lot of hard work. And actually, if I can say, you know, the way that I kind of like to distribute our work with the MPO staff, I don't like to have a lot of overlap. You know, in fact, going back when Mark was running stuff, we didn't have an option, right? Everything was overlapped because it was just him, right? And then you brought me in, and I think that we worked really well together to sort of divide stuff out where we weren't like overlapping on stuff. We sort of divide stuff up, you know, do a real division of labor where we would take things that, you know, suited our strengths, right? And that continued, you know, with the way the MPO was run. And, you know, the last tip update, I did basically the whole thing, right? You know, John was in charge then. And we kind of split things up. And I was like, yeah, I'll do a tip update. You know, I'd never done one before. I worked with you a little bit on one before that. But, you know, so it was a learning experience. But I just like to say with this one, you know, I asked Al if he wanted to do it. I'm like, you want to do a tip update? And he did it. He did that whole tip update. So he did a great job.
Thank you, sir.
So thank you for doing that. Because it is. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of coordination. There's a lot of things there that I think were kind of new to you, and you did an excellent job.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Just to echo Kerry, I mean, you guys were phenomenal with PennDOT, with even highways, anything I needed as far as questions or anything like that. I mean, Chris King, I don't know how many times I bugged him, but I appreciate the support because I couldn't have gotten here without that. So.
Okay, do we have a motion to accept and recommend the tip to the coordinating committee for adoption on June 13th?
Mr. Gerald, I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Gerald. Do we have a second?
Todd, right, I'll second.
Thank you, Todd.
All right, I'm okay with that.
Okay, questions on the motion? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, motion passes. Thank you, everyone. And we'll go back now to the Watts MPO recommendation letter designating River Valley Transit Authority. And that'll be Todd. Todd's back on the line. All yours, Todd.
He was just there. Todd, can you hear us again?
Sorry, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
We can hear you now, Todd.
This morning, but
What we're looking for, as you know, in this background, obviously, back in 2020, there was an administrative change with the city and also with RPG. And one of the items that was highlighted in RPG's Act 44 review in 2021 was governance and oversight of the city land support transit system. With recommendations from PennDOT and the city administration and city council having some discussion and establishing a committee. Ultimately, what was decided was to form a municipal authority for River Valley Transit. Will become a separate entity from the city of Williamsport. The board has been appointed by the mayor, and they had their initial meeting 2 weeks ago and started the process to get the authority formed, and the goal is to be operating by July 1st of 2022. There's a hope that this is going to have to happen in order to make that the operation possible. Part of that was with the initial meeting, adopting the bylaws, establishing policy procedures, effective June 30th. All current employees of RBC, which is the RSA employees, will be terminated and effective July 1st become employees of RBCA. One piece that has to happen is FTA is the redesignation of the entity to receive federal dollars, and that would include the planning dollars that RGT currently receives through WAC for the UPWC under Section 5307, and then there's also Section 5339. What we're requesting of WAC is to provide a resolution recommending the redesignation of the planning funds to go from RGT to RGTA. This resolution will need to go to the governor's office and will accompany his letter for the redesignation to FTA. This is a basically a formality. The redesignation and all these documents are just prepared by our VPA solicitor, Jill Nagy. She's done a number of these authority establishments, most recently, I believe, with Rapid Transit and CAP out in Harrisburg for the FRTA. But this is what we're requesting. If anyone has any questions, we'd be happy to answer at this time.
Just to clarify, everyone, this is what you may have, if you're on the coordinating committee, you may have saw an email that went out that. We asked e-ballot, there was an ask for an e-ballot for the coordinating committee for this approval. But we have to, according to the bylaws and procedures, it needs to go through a technical committee first. And once we give our, if there's an approval today, yes vote, then, Sal or whoever can send out the e-ballot once again this afternoon. And then by Friday or whenever they get a majority of the votes, be able to pass it and Todd will be able to move forward.
Carrie, just so there's no interruption with the money flow or anything, does the FTA have to grant the final approval of the 485 June 30th?
I can't answer that question. I don't know if the FTA is on today.
They're not. They didn't join us today.
But I have to follow up. I don't know. Gene Rosiak is on the phone for Federal Highways. Gene, would you happen to know maybe something on those lines?
No. We would have to follow up with FDA on that, I think.
Well, let us know, because if there's something going on where we have to, remind people or do some kind of prodding to through what it's supposed to, there's a deadline.
Yes, I still don't know how it will affect it. It's coming into your, FDA's,
right.
Yeah, federal dollars will be is a pass-through for your UPW.
That's right.
So I don't know as far as with the UPWP, the name change and the recipient. I don't know how that's going to affect the transit But that being said, so, you know, if you're going to submit invoicing for anything to Federal Transit, if this takes effect, you know, July 1st, the next UPWP, so realistically, probably not look until October until you submit invoicing for first quarter. So I think any sort of issues that need to be resolved in this early summer, it will be done by the time you're ready to submit any invoices.
Yeah, as long as, you know, when you're submitting the invoice, if there's not an issue there, where it would be an issue is if they were looking at cost incurred and when those things were. It's
true.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So if it's July 1, this hasn't been FDA approved yet, and you're incurring costs,
yeah,
we want to make sure that we're still allowable costs,
yeah,
in the invoice,
yeah,
from July 1 on.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
So one thing I would point out here, that the actual motion here, we're actually recommending to the coordinating committee to adopt a resolution with certain text that's not actually to do the recommendation. So the request from RDT is that the coordinating committee adopt a resolution stating a certain thing. That's what went out in the email. That, and then I will, after that's adopted as a resolution by the coordinating committee, then it's almost two requests, and then I would place that resolution into a letter, and it would go out, that I would issue that as a watch.
Okay. Do we have any questions? Hearing none. Do I have a motion from what Scott has said for the resolution?
Okay.
Thank you, Skip. I have a second.
Joe Ranger, second.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions on the motion? Hearing none. You all in favor? Say aye.
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 Those opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. So the next step will be that we'll do an e-ballot for the resolution.
I can,
that gets passed, and Sal will get that out.
I can get it up this afternoon.
So
I'll resend it and clarify,
yeah,
what it's about. Yeah.
It'll be the same people that got it, but
yeah,
when you do send the email out, I would keep off anyone that's not a voting member.
Okay.
And just CC those people at the bottom.
Okay.
So they know it's out there. Because I know there's some people, like Federal Highways, were included in the email, but
they're
not voting members. And FDA is the same way, so.
Okay.
And then that e-ballot will be reaffirmed at the coordinating committee.
On June 13th.
June 13th, yeah.
And the e-ballot is final bylaws, there's 5 days, so we get that out today, 5 days from now, before we get the result.
Official.
I mean, if we hear back from everybody, we can conclude the ballot sooner. But per the bylaws, they have 5 days to respond to consider the email.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. That concludes our action items for now of this meeting. So next, we'll move into discussion items. First item is the management action report. That will be covered by John Rank in District 3. John?
Thank you. Thank you, good morning, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yep.
Thank you. Going over these actions today, just a quick overview. Most of them are either increases or additions and some just technical adjustments. To hit some of the highlights, we had an increase on 2014, SR 2014 over Bennett's Run, and also an increase for the low bid for Fairfield Crossing. We had some other small increases, and we had a soil size project on 2032, and we added a resurfacing to pay for some maintenance work on Chattanooga to Glade Run on SR 2014. That's the highlights, and
And just to mention one thing, the Fairfield Crossings project, the bid came in a little bit higher, but there was governor's discretionary funding from DCED on that project. So, Mark was pretty instrumental in getting that taken care of. Talked with Deputy Secretary Shiflett, and they worked through DCED and were able to get some additional money to meet up for that low bid, so it didn't have to come off the regional tip. Do we have any questions for John? Okay, hearing none. The next item is a long-range transportation plan update to be covered by Scott.
Yes, it will. I'm actually going to...
You're going to drive?
I'm going to, yeah, sit over here so I can advance through the slides. All right. So, good morning, everyone. Here's our first update on our LRTP update on the update. As you'll recall, the tech committee is serving as the steering committee for the LRTP update process. Today, it's pretty small bite. There isn't a lot of substance. I mean, there is, but not a huge amount. Starting with our next meeting, we'll have a lot more meat to the update. So what we're going to go over today is the update to the first chapter, which is very small in the first half, or actually a little less than half, the first beginning part of chapter two. So the first big change from our last LRTP here is just the sort of branding, I guess, of the plan. So I wanted to come up with a new title. I think our last two plans, we used the same title. It was Moving in the Right Direction. But this time, I kind of want to do a little rebrand on it. So the title I've come up with for the plan update is Connecting People and Places, which I thought was pretty good, pretty catchy. You know, it's a nice snappy title. Now, with a long-range transportation plan, we are required to have a 20-year planning horizon. So that would be, since we're adopting in 2023, it would go to 2043. But to mirror the statewide LRTP, I'm going to take it out to 2045. And, you know, it's a, more aesthetically pleasing number, too, 2045 and 2043. Just like a random string of numbers there, 2043. So the one thing you'll notice as you look at the draft that we sent out with the packet, the formatting is a lot more spare and simple compared to some of our last ones. You know, we sort of went all in the last two plans of really getting into document formatting and sort of producing something that is sort of intended is like a print document, right? So everything was formatted in such a way that you're thinking about having a spiral binding on the left-hand side and, you know, something you're going to have a hard copy of. But we're kind of changing that. We're going more spare and simple. We're going to try and minimize the amount of text. We're going to emphasize more maps and informative graphics. And by simplifying it, that's going to allow us to port the entire plan directly as one document into a website. So it'll be web formatted instead of having it being a downloadable PDF. Now, we'll have a downloadable, portable PDF version of it, but it'll look exactly the same as what we have on the website, just, you know, broken up into pages instead of one big long text. So this has some big advantages for us. Number one, a website is a lot more interactive than a PDF is, so we can add a lot more interactive elements to it. One thing that I've always really wanted to put into an LRTP is to use what are called story maps, where you've got an interactive map element that has some informative text with it, and it kind of flows through, and you can move through the elements and interact with everything. So we can embed some story map elements into the website. The other huge advantage for us for embedding the LRTP right into our WATS website is that it allows us to tap into all the embedded translation and accessibility features that are in the website. So with a PDF, you know, if you want to translate it, we have to pay for a translation service. But if the LRTP is hosted right as part of the website, we already have Google Translate built right into the website. And just with a click of a button, anyone can translate our LRTP into dozens of languages. So that's a huge advantage for us because, you know, we don't end up having any potential additional expenses that we would have to incur regarding translation services. And, you know, and it's interactive and it's self-serve, too. So if anyone wants to see it in a different language, they can just go ahead and request it, and Google will translate the whole document into the other language. And, you know, even with the text and graphics, we can do alt text on there to take care of that. So the web format, I think, is going to work really well for us. And after we get each section of the plan sort of run through the tech committee, the steering committee here, if there are any suggestions, changes, we'll make them, and we're going to start loading the draft text of the plan right up into the website as we're going through. And that also helps us a lot with getting public comment and public review because we can just send people a web address. They can go see the whole draft right there without having to download a document. You know, it'll all be like, you know, mobile formatted. It'll be a lot easier to read on your phone. But so that's going to be a big change. We think it's going to be a big benefit to us. So chapter one of the plan, the Watts overview, outlines the history and structure of Watts, you know, basically what we do, you know. But we didn't really see any big changes. Like our Watts committees are our Watts committees. We still function the same way we did 5 years ago. The text that is in this draft is pretty much ported directly over from the last plan. I went through and cleaned up a couple of things. You know, we did have the change on coordinating committee with the borough representation on the coordinating committee. So that did change. Besides that, we didn't really see many changes as far as how Watts is administered and how we work as an MPO. So that part didn't change very much. But when we get into chapter two, that's where we see change. So chapter two is a very important chapter of our plan. So that's the one that we title Planning Context. And that contains all of the guidance that we get from the federal government, from FHWA, from FTA, state guidance that we see in the state long-range planning, and all of the local planning efforts that inform our priorities. So Lycoming County Comprehensive Plan and a whole host of other local plans that contain information in them that inform our transportation planning process. The second half of that chapter, which we're not going to get to today, but that's going to be for our next meeting. It's just the second half of chapter two. That's the part where I think we're going to get the most interest, to be honest, because that's where we really get into demographic patterns. We look at economic development patterns, land use patterns, how they've changed, and that's where we really start to build our foundation for how we're going to forecast ahead 22 years to see how we want to approach investing in our transportation infrastructure. So that second half, that'll be the next meeting, and that's probably going to be the section of the plan that's the biggest lift for us as far as preparing it, because we do all that analysis in-house, and I mean, it's a lot of work looking at all that demographic data, crunching those numbers and looking at, you know, where we've been, what our trends are, and where we're likely to go. And you'll remember, we're going to do scenario planning with this update as well. So it's not just going to be, well, we're going to look into our crystal ball, we're going to ponder our orb and see where we think we're going to go and just, you know, give one alternative. We're going to look at several alternatives of where Lycoming County could be going over the next 20-some years. So, the first section in the update, though, in Chapter 2, we looked at any updates to federal guidance. Now, obviously, we've had one big change when it comes to federal guidance. We had IIJABIL, which I'm just going to call the new infrastructure bill for brevity here. So, the new infrastructure bill continued all the guidance from the FAST Act, which was the prior transportation bill, except that it added some I would say, relatively minor new guidance, which we'll get into in a moment. It also juiced all the existing funding categories for the next 5 years. So there's a lot of extra transportation funding flowing in. And it also created some exciting new funding programs. And we'll be exploring those more when we get to the fourth chapter of the plan, where we talk about implementation, because funding strategies is a big section of that chapter. It always has been in our update. So that's where we'll look at some of those new funding programs that were created through the new infrastructure bill and how they might match some of our needs that we identify through our planning process. So, as I said, the new infrastructure bill continued the guidance from the FAST Act. There are 10 planning factors in the FAST Act. So these are, you know, in a nutshell, what we want to look at as far as areas of need. You know, we want to look at our current transportation system and how well does it match these 10 factors. And if it doesn't, that's where we look at potentials for projects, right? Is if we don't feel that we're meeting these 10 needs, that's where we want to look at programming projects. Now, I don't have to go through and read all of these, but just know that there are 10 of these planning factors contained within the FAST Act. They're continued through in the new infrastructure bill, and these really form the core of what we look at when we're looking at our strategic priorities later in the planning. You know, we start here, and then we add, you know, any other needs that come up through looking at other things. Now, I said there are some new considerations that we have to look at stemming from the new infrastructure bill. Now, a lot of the new guidance, from what I've seen, it actually doesn't apply to our MPO because they're very specific to the larger urban areas, the TMAs. But there were two things that were in there that were new, but we're already doing them. So number one was it encourages MPOs to increase consideration of housing patterns in coordination with officials responsible for housing as part of our planning process. And I think, Sal, we did add a few entities to our interested parties list, right?
Correct. We already had, like Home County Housing Association out there, but I went back through and added STEP Housing Division, and then also Habitat for Humanity. Our community planner, Jenny, got me a list, and I added all those in there, so it's all updated. So whenever we push anything out again, there's about six agencies now, I believe, whereas before we only had like two or three.
And we'll make sure we roll that into our next public participation plan. But we've already added those entities into our contact list, you know, to conform with this guidance. And we've already been looking at housing development patterns as part of our demographics and land use analysis that we looked at in our LRTP. So we're already doing that. And the other new activity that was specific in the new infrastructure bill for MPOs is it allows MPOs to use social media and other web-based tools to encourage public participation, which is something that we've been doing for quite a while. And, you know, Sal does an excellent job at curating our social media accounts, which we have Facebook, Twitter,
Instagram. We have a LinkedIn account. We have the potential to have a YouTube channel if we want to spin that up. So
yeah. So I mean, we are already making great use of social media and web-based tools. And as I said, we're going to tap into using our website and web-based tools as like really baked into our LRTP. So I was happy to see that guidance. And, you know, it's always nice to see when there's new guidance that comes out and it's things you're already doing. You know, it really makes you feel like you're, you know, really, you know, ahead of the curve there. So, good for us. Now, there is a new consideration in the new infrastructure bill that we're not doing. And this is the one that we're going to have to look at a little bit. And I'm going to float an idea out here to the steering committee about how we can address this. So, the new infrastructure bill states that every MPO is now required to use at least 2.5% of their MPO PL funds towards planning activities that increase safety and accessibility. Or, instead, you can develop what's called a complete streets prioritization plan. Now, I look at those two options. You know, we can, you know, do a UBWP amendment we carve out 2.5% of our budgeted amount. We have to set up a new timesheet code to track that time, where we're making sure that at least 2.5% of our funding, and this would actually be utilized funding. It wouldn't be like just our budgeted amount, I'm assuming. It would be time we actually tag in. It would have to be traceable back to safety and accessibility. That's a lot of paperwork, and that's a lot of extra effort to track time that, I mean, we're kind of spending time on that stuff already as part of our processes. But the way I read it is that it would have to be very specific to those, you know, areas of planning, of safety and accessibility. But we do have this option of doing a complete streets prioritization plan. So my proposal to the steering committee here is that I draft a complete streets prioritization plan as part of our LRTP update. So it will be a separate document, but develop the same time as our LRTP, because we're already going to be looking at most of the factors that you would use, or all of the factors you would use to prioritize streets for a complete streets project as part of our LRTP update. So not our next meeting, but the meeting after that, the draft chapter I'll have is where we actually look at system condition of all the different transportation modes in Lycoming County. So we'll already be looking at all of the things that we would use to identify and prioritize road corridors for complete streets projects. So the way I look at it, I mean, just for background for everyone here, I just wanted to include a little bit of a summary of what we mean when we say complete streets. So the federal highways definition of complete streets, they're streets designed and operated to enable safe use and support mobility for all users. Really, what this means is you're designing streets to meet the context, right? Community context here is very important. You know, when we talk about complete streets, we're not talking about putting bike lanes on every single roadway in Lycoming County, right? If you're somewhere in a very rural area, that just doesn't make sense. But it also means you don't necessarily want to design a street running right through a downtown like it's a, you know, divided highway drag strip, right? You want to think about how you can accommodate all of the modes that are already present in an area so that they're all able to operate together in the most safe and efficient manner possible. So when we think about that, the factors that we would look at for doing a complete streets prioritization plan, we want to look at things like mixed-use density. We want to look at proximity to schools and parks, whether you're in an urban or rural setting. We also have pedestrian crash history we can look at, speed-related vehicle crashes, transit routes and stops. Now, those are all data sets that we already have. So really, you know, what I look at this as is it's an analysis project to figure out a methodology using all those factors, and we'll dig into it more and see what other areas have done. We know we have the data. It's just how do we mix them together to create some sort of ranking or scoring for streets to say, well, this area would be a really good candidate for a complete streets project and this one would not. And that's really, at the end of the day, what you're looking at. You can feed all the factors for a certain stretch of roadway into this process, and at the end of it, it spits out like a up or down. Is this a good area for a complete streets project or not? So I have sort of yay or nay here. Just if the steering committee has any input here, one way or the other, if they think this is a good approach to just go ahead and do a complete streets prioritization plan as part of the LRTP update.
Hey, Scott, on that point.
Yes, Mark.
Do we have any federal guidance about what would be the minimum requirements of a, you know, an acceptable prioritization plan? Do they give you any information on that? Or
no.
Kind of totally up to us, sort of.
At this point, I think it would be up to us. I haven't seen any, like, specific guidance on this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just looking at the two options, I think this is something that actually gives us a lot of benefit. Because this is, my ideal sort of end, like, format for this would be a web-based tool, because I would want to look at, you know, as much of the road network as I can, right? And you know, not just the state roads, but local roads too, as much as possible, so that we can do some sort of web-based tool where anybody can go and look and see the areas that sort of rise in importance as far as being a good candidate for a complete streets project. And it would also, it would feed into, like, you know, later when we're doing project selection, you know, later, you know, would help inform PennDOT Connect's conversations as well, right? So, you know, that's where when we have communities that, you know, might want to say, hey, you know, you're, you know, PennDOT's doing a project on this roadway, you know, or, you know, can we do some sort of complete streets thing? We can go look at our prioritization plan. If it ranks highly on there, if it meets a lot of those factors, then, yeah, I mean, that, that helps inform that conversation as well.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you because if you look back at the history of lots in relation to complete streets, if you look at your two options, the first one, in my view, is just an accounting thing.
Right.
That's all it is. You're taking existing things and then you're trying to, you know, carve out with some data, with timesheets and that, you know, oh, we spend this much of this kind of activity. But it doesn't pay a dividend back to us in terms of a meaningful planning product.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This does. And we started, actually, Complete Streets back in 2000. We brought a guy in named Dan Burton. He was from Florida. I don't know if you guys ever had any interaction with him down in Reading.
I don't remember.
Yeah. He was sort of, at the time, your renowned Complete Streets guru. He came in here. He did audits of all our major communities. Gave us some interesting information. But we had no real resource available to do anything with it. And so it languished. And then what would happen was, as you know, there would be a community that would pop up, you know, every several years and said, hey, I'd like to do something that kind of looks like Complete Streets because I have a project here that I'd like to be able to tuck in under that banner. This gives us a more comprehensive review of everything rather than pop-ups. And then it'll, I think it'll make better informed decisions for us that where we should leverage all these extra investments for Bill and that.
Mm-hmm.
You can better target those investments with some good data and facts behind them that would, you know, through a prioritization process that would make sure we're getting a good return on the investment. So I think it's the second option is definitely the way we should be going here.
Also, is this a way that we could kind of channel that into the several state streets and roads project?
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, I think this is something we should definitely do, but mm-hmm. then also, as we want to move forward and really look at trying to implement projects, if we can channel it into to moving to get the state streets and roads program, I think that's due in September, to get the plan done, and then also to then apply for actual implementation funds after we have that. That could be another avenue for project implementation.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason I want to make this as wide of a scope as far as the roadway network as possible, because it opens it up to project sponsors outside of, you know, the usual, right? Not just Watts or, you know, PennDOT going after the funding. Like, if we do the entire roadway network, it could be any borough or the city or township could go after the funding as well, because we provided them the, you know, the tool where they can sort of back it up with data that they have, like, a strong candidate for a project. You said something, Kerry?
Yeah, I just had a question. Since Gene from Federal Highway is on the phone, Gene, is there going to be any formal guidance issued for Federal Highways in the future here on this? And also, is there some sort of deadline on when this is going to be due, when the guidance is issued for Federal Highways?
Yes, Kerry. Yeah, at this point, we haven't received any guidance on that particular provision. So, in terms of the deadline, that would not be set until after any such guidance would be released.
So, my question is, Gene, before Scott puts all his work into this, and then Federal Highways issues guidance, you know, are you okay with him moving forward with this? Because I think he wants to get going on this, and, you know, we don't want to hold them up, but we don't want you to come back and say you need to do X, Y, and Z, and it's not done.
Yeah,
you know, according to guidance.
It will probably be fall when I start working on this. So we've got a few months for that to, you know, kind of shake out a little bit. But I'm also happy to serve as a pilot for Federal Highways if they want me to. You know.
Well, it looks like the state street to get to do the planning part of it that's required. You have to have a state street plan, and the action plan grant is due September 15th. And it says here they're used to develop, complete, or supplement a comprehensive safety action plan. The goal of the action plan is to develop a holistic, well-defined strategy to prevent roadway fatalities and serious injuries in any locality.
Yeah, that sounds like kind of an update of the old local road safety plan process that was tied into HSEP. But this, yeah, I mean, just from the guidance I read from the new infrastructure bill, this sounds like this might be separate. Like, this is sort of a required activity for an MPO to do. It's one or the other. You got to pick one to do. So, you know, this is...
That's what I said. Gene, if you could maybe dig a little bit, find out what's going on with this a little bit more and get back to us.
Yeah.
And Scott brings up another question, and this is maybe off topic a little bit, but he says it's required by MPOs. Gene, can you find out if it's required by RPOs? Because we have some RPOs around the state that if they're not in the, it's not in the guidance that says they don't have to do it, you know, they don't have to do it, but just want to try to make those kind of things clear up front. So if you could follow up for us, that would be greatly appreciated. Maybe if you could report back to the coordinating committee, even if you're not going to be attending, if you could give it to maybe me or some, you know, Scott, Sal, Austin, one of the staff, that would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, I will see what I can find out on that.
And I was serious about Watts being the pilot for doing one of these, too. If we're out ahead of everybody, yeah. I'm totally in on that.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you, everyone. You know, another question for Jeannie. Like, the new infrastructure bill also requires Federal Highways, states in there that they're to provide better tools to MPOs to study travel demand and modeling and evaluate the effects of highway and transit investments on use and condition. So, Gene, do you have any idea when we can expect those new tools? Because it says that in the new infrastructure bill, in the guidance, that USDOT and Federal Highways are supposed to produce some sort of web-based tool specific for MPOs where we can look at this travel demand modeling stuff. Have you received any information on when that could land?
No, I haven't heard anything on that front either. I can drop the link into the chat about the infrastructure website, which is where all the fact sheets and the guidance are typically published. But in terms of anything on this specific provision, no, I haven't heard anything on this.
Yeah, and that's
at this point.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good resource. That's where I went to get all the information that I got when I was looking at federal guidance. It's very well laid out. I like how they break it out for Federal Highways. When they do the guidance, they do separate fact sheets for different end users. So there's one specific for MPOs. So it's basically what you need to know as an MPO with the new infrastructure bill. So it's very useful.
Gary, is there a rulemaking element in the bill for they just look at different things in the bill and go, hey, here's some guides here, but
you bring up a really good point.
Yeah.
Gene, you might be able to help me out with this a little bit, but I did talk to Matt Smoker, who was previously at times with a liaison from Federal Highways here at Williamsport. He told me, we had that discussion,
yeah.
And he said that there is going to be possibly some rulemaking. So you may not see certain items that they're in their guidance issue until after that occurs, and that could be
a year and a half.
So, Gene, maybe you know a little bit more about that now, or
what you said there about with Matt? That's also what I've heard is that that rulemaking process is a lengthier process, and it needs to be changed in the actual regulation. And yeah, that would be something that we would have to wait for that to unfold.
We've had situations in prior bills, I remember, reauthorizations, that the rulemaking actually was so long in development that the bill expired and the new one, but the old rulemaking actually wasn't even done. I'm so busy by this time. Yeah, I remember those days.
All right. So now moving on to the state guidance that we get from PennDOT. So now, Gene, you can be out of the spotlight a little bit. I can put Carrie in the spotlight. You're talking about our so in November of 2021, PennDOT completed its current statewide LRTP update. So we've always been fortunate that our LRTP update starts right after the state finishes theirs. So we get this, it's a nice workflow for us. We can see what the state is looking at, what their priorities are, what Pennsylvania statewide, it looks like our emphasis areas are supposed to be for transportation planning right when we're starting our update process. So, at least for the past three, I think we've had that link up really well, which is good for us. So, along with the LRTP, Pennsylvania also does a strategic highway safety plan and a freight movement plan, which those three documents together are titled Pennsylvania 2045. At this time, the freight plan isn't finalized. So in the draft, I only included guidance from the LRTP and the strategic highway safety plan. But when the freight plan is finalized, we did incorporate that heavily into the last LRTP update. And it, actually, in this new update, I really want to emphasize freight movement even more than we did before. That's something I'm going to be digging into a lot is freight movement, looking at, intermodal facilities and, especially highway freight, if there, or any impacts, any projects I want to do there. So just at a higher level, the state LRTP has six goals that they really look at, which lines up very well with what our goals have been. So this, along with the 10 planning factors from the federal guidance, we'll look at these six goals of the Pennsylvania LRTP. So they'll sort of get baked together into the cake here when we're talking about what our overall sort of strategic direction for our plan is going to be. We sort of, weave those together along with, I was getting ahead of myself. I almost jumped right into local planning. All right. Strategic Highway Safety Plan looks at a number of focus areas for safety. So they really get into looking at the data on crashes and seeing what is contributing to the largest number of crashes. So there are a number of these focus areas for safety that are identified, but the Strategic Highway Safety Plan really pulls out three big ones as primary focus areas that we should look at in our planning for safety. Lane departures and pedestrian safety are things that we can take a big role in, as far as our planning processes. The third is impaired driving, which we have a lesser sort of minor role as far as what we do as an MPO for, tackling impaired driving. But we can do quite a bit through our planning and programming to look at lane departures and pedestrian safety. Now, I can say, in the past few TIP updates, we've done a lot of guide rail improvements, replacing guide rail, and that's something that really does impact those lane departure crashes when you have improved guide rail in different areas where you look at where you have high incidence of lane departures. And the other one being pedestrian safety, actually, that lines up really well with us doing a complete streets prioritization plan. So, all these things are just, fitting together very well for us. All right. Now, local planning guidance. So, we look at the federal guidance and state guidance. We also want to look at all the local planning that has been done. So here in Lycoming County, We have a countywide comprehensive plan. We also do 6 multi-municipal comprehensive plans along with that. So each one of those multi-municipal comprehensive plans is based around sort of a, you know, urban cluster, urbanized area in the county. So we've got the Greater Williamsport planning area is the largest, but we also have some that are built around Muncie, Montoursville, Jersey Shore, Montgomery, and the Lycoming Creek corridor going up through Old Lycoming, Hepburn Township, Lycoming Township, up to Trout Run. So those are our comprehensive planning areas. Now, within our comprehensive planning process, we look at transportation needs. Now, our last comprehensive plan updates, the whole thing was structured where we looked at, they were built around what we called issue statements. But essentially what we did is, through our comprehensive planning, we took a real problem-solution approach to things. We tried to identify problems in our communities that we could solve with projects. And we identified very specific implementable projects to address those issues. So there was an overall issue statement, you know, that identified a problem that had to do with transportation being, you know, not sufficient to meet the needs of the community. We then identified specific projects countywide and within each area that would address deficiencies in the transportation system. So, when did we finish that? Was that 2017? 2017. So it's now been 5 years since we completed that comprehensive planning process. So I wanted to provide a little update of where we're at with the transportation projects that were included in our comprehensive plan. Because in our last LRTP update, which was 5 years ago, it was right around the same time that we were doing the comprehensive plan updates, you know, we baked a lot of those same implementable projects into our LRTP as we did, you know, they flowed right out of the comp plan into the LRTP. So one thing I will note, Lower Lycoming did not prioritize transportation. I guess they felt their transportation system was fine. It wasn't one of their priority like areas as far as problems that they were seeing there. So they're not included in the table. But every other planning area we looked at countywide and the other 5 multi-municipal areas all prioritized the transportation system in various ways that needed some projects. So anything that's green on the screen, they're completed. So we finished the airport terminal, that's done. Pathway to Health is wrapped up, that's completed. Another project was the reconstruction of Millionaire Drive, which is the access drive from 4th Street up to the high school. They got a state grant to complete that project, and it's all done. It actually looks amazing. There's a nice, for a long time, there was no pedestrian walkway next to the road going up, and now there is. So students can, you know, if they really want to hike up that hill, though, you know, but they can do it now safely without walking in the roadway. Anything that's yellow is in progress. So those are things that we are actively working on at this time. So some of these are things that were programmed. So you'll see Muncie, Main and Water Street intersection. That's a TIP project, right? We've got that programmed. We're working on that right now. You'll see our CSBT impact study shows up on here. And that's something that, you know, we just did a work program amendment on that. You know, we're still working on that. We're moving into implementation on that. So, you know, there are very few projects on here that show up as not started, right? I mean, we're either completed on quite a few of them or substantively completed on them or, you know, very much in progress. So one of the things I want to look at are some of these things that are showing up gray. Like, is there a reason why we haven't proceeded with them? And I think that provides some guidance here as we're working on our LRTP, is where we're looking for projects that we want to advance as illustrative projects where they're on the LRTP, if there's any way that we can put them in there, that's a starting place for me. Because anything that's yellow, we're already working on it. We want to support it, but is there anything that we can do to get started on any of these gray things, or were these more sort of wish list items and that's why we didn't get started on it? But that'll be part of our exploration as we move forward with the LRTP update. So another countywide plan that is going to provide a lot of good information for our LRTP is the countywide hazard mitigation plan, which I got to work on. Actually, I think the map's a little blurry there, but the map on the left there, that's actually a landslide hazard risk analysis that I did for the hazard mitigation plan. So initially, I did that, not even for the hazard mitigation plan. That was to look at landslide risk to roadways, because we have so many slide issues with roads here that I wanted to try and figure out, like, where are the areas where we're going to see it the most, right? Is there, like, a tool that we could, like, develop here? So that analysis is already done, but I do plan on revisiting that, and that's going to get really baked into this LRTP, where we look at, you know, areas of lost slide risk. The consultant also looked at traffic incident hotspots, which, you know, is basically just our high volume road network. I bet if you did the same thing with traffic volumes, it would just look exactly the same. But, you know, that data is also available to us. That's something we can look at. Now, a specific recommendation that did flow out of the hazard mitigation plan was that it supports the implementation of our regional operations plan to help reduce incidents and decrease response times for emergency services. So our operations plan, our ROC, was just updated last year, and actually had a few new projects on it. So that's something that will also inform our plan. I might actually insert a little more of a write-up into our draft here about the ROC, because I think that there were some really good recommendations there that can inform our planning. As I said, still looking through some other local and regional plans to determine how or if they should inform the LRTP. The ROP, our Open Space and Recreation Plan, which is sorely in need of an update at this time. I think that was last updated in 2005, so I know we kind of talked about that. I also wanted to reach out to DCNR, because there are quite a few areas in our county where it's extremely rural. We're in state forest, and our transportation system links into DCNR's forestry road system. You know, if there's any way that we can integrate those planning processes, I'm going to find out from our state foresters to see if there's, you know, anything we can do there. And then others, I mean, we're digging around. If there are any other local plans that anyone on the steering committee is aware of, please just shoot me an email, things that I might want to look at. I know that we've done quite a few other studies and local plans, and I want to make sure that I capture any recommendations they have that helps to inform our transportation planning process. So, that's all I have as far as content. I just wanted to give everyone sort of a look-see ahead for our next meeting. As I said, for our next meeting, I'll have a detailed analysis of demographic and development trends in Lycoming County. Specifically, we'll be looking at population change, where growth and development is occurring, what sort of trends and patterns we see there, where we're seeing land use changes, and another note there where, you know, I already went over that, you know, we're formatting this very simply so that we can move it over to the website. So I can be done talking for a little bit now, except for answering questions if anyone has any.
Thanks, Scott. Do we have any questions for Scott on the Long Range Transportation Plan update? Okay. Thank you, Scott. Keep up the good work. It's going to be a nice plan.
Hey, I don't have a question. I just do have a comment. The county is going to be updating its zoning ordinance and subdivision and plan development ordinance for the 20 municipalities that we cover. So we just received notice that we got a grant to the state to help with that process. So that will tie into what Scott's going to be doing, looking at with the future land development.
Thank you, Shannon. All right. Sal, I thought I heard somebody ding in there.
There's somebody let me check right now.
Waiting room.
Nope, I don't see anybody out there.
All right. Next item on the agenda here is the CSVT letter of support. Mark.
Oh, yeah.
As you know, we've been talking about the bill legislation that was passed by Congress last fall, and substantial additional federal resources are made available to the states for both formula discretionary programs. We're seeing it now funneling into our area. And the question is, you know, how aggressive do we want to be in getting money beyond the formulas that we're entitled to with specific reference to certain discretionary programs? What we're seeing in District 3 already is not wasting any time. About 2 weeks ago, they contacted me and a number of other organizations in our region, and they informed us that they're putting together an application for some federal funds that will be available through BIL to put towards some major project investments. They've identified CFCT, the Southern Section, as a candidate that would be eligible for these funds. And like I said, what could happen here is if that money was approved, that could free up some state funds that were committed to the project that could be used in other projects in the Commonwealth in our region. And that would just basically stretch available dollars further to do more good as a whole for Pennsylvania. So they were interested to see if Watts would be interested in sending a support letter with that application to USDOT, and we felt that that was something we definitely wanted to support. So the letter is in your packet. It was sent out to Secretary Buttigieg I think last week, and I know there's many other support letters that are that have been coming in throughout the region on it. My heavy representation I saw was down around the Central Susquehanna Valley Chamber, and that those are the counties, obviously, that actually house the CSET project directly. So we're hoping that this can get funded. Does the district or anybody have any idea on a couple things here, like number one, when they might approve these applications?
I don't know about the approval, but I do know that John or Gerald, maybe help me out with this. Isn't the application going to be submitted like today or sometime here in the next few days?
Yeah, within the next few days, I think it's to be submitted. And I did read through all the guidance probably over a month ago with the timelines for award. I don't recall them off the top of my head, but basically the applications are due, and then they're all being reviewed and ranked scored. The scoring process that they'll go through with each project. And reviewing the scoring, it looks like CSVP, in my opinion, should rank up fairly high scoring system.
Yeah.
So, I can thank Watts for sending that letter of support.
Also, are you at liberty to say how much money you're requesting from the customer? Because that did come out of the briefing stuff I got.
Well, the numbers change at times. I don't know what the final number is.
Or at least the order of magnitude.
Yeah, I
can't.
I don't have that right now.
When they submit,
can we get a copy of it, I guess? Would that be possible?
I can talk to Matt Beck and Kristen Mulcahy. Working on it at the program 16.
Yeah, because it would be helpful. Sometimes legislators contact us about stuff like that.
Yeah,
we don't have the basic information.
I know the numbers change a little bit. It's here and there, so I'll get you the information. Thank you.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. Next, any questions about that for Mark? Hearing none, we'll move on to CSVT implementation from Sal.
Thanks, Terry. Hi, everyone. As Scott mentioned at the beginning of the meeting here, we reaffirmed the CSVT implementation amendment. Since that was passed, we went ahead and we do have that $150,000 in the UPWP that's going to go effective July 1st here, so $75,000 for each of the two fiscal years. The MTO extended our contract with Michael Baker International to expire June 30th, 2024, so they'll be helping us work on this. And our first task, CSBT Steering Committee as the CSBT Implementation Task Force will be in July. I believe it's like mid-July is what they're kind of shooting for now. That will reconvene everybody that was on that steering committee and really look at implementation as the next steps. I'm happy to answer any questions about that.
So I did see from the consultants, they send out a dual poll.
There was a poll to see like what dates would work for everybody.
Yeah.
So if you receive that email, please respond to that so that they can schedule that meeting. But again, I think they were shooting for like mid July because you know the first week is obviously the holiday, so they don't want to.
Questions for Sal? Hearing any? All right. Other business? Public comment?
I just have one item, just sort of FYI. As you know, I think I agreed with the last meeting, the State Transportation Advisory Committee did approve my request for development of the Pennsylvania Aviation Strategic Plan. And so that effort is now underway. PennDOT hired Michael Baker and Gavin Fleming as a consultant to do the plan. We've had two task force meetings that I co-chair on that. But the thing that you need to know is I'm going to be working with Richard Powell at the airport because there's going to be a series of regional listening sessions across Pennsylvania about the getting people, basically a lot of the stakeholders that are involved in aviation, getting those folks the ability to comment on different aspects of aviation that we want to factor into the planning process now, early, rather than late in the planning process. So these listening sessions are going to occur mainly in June and early July. So ours is probably going to be sometime in late June. So Watts is going to get an invitation. So if you're on the Watts mailing list, basically you're going to get an invitation to attend the listening session. And we don't know yet whether it's going to be an in-person thing at the airport or virtually. That's still being worked out. But stay tuned. You'll get some email or whatever communication about it. And I would encourage the Watts folks to participate in it because, as you know, aviation is pretty important to us right now with the fact we don't have the air service. And that's one of the elements that's being looked at in the strategic plan is trying to develop a better game plan for commercial air service in Pennsylvania beyond what we've got today.
Thank you, Mark. Anyone else out there from the public or any of the other agencies, HWA, FTA, any comments? Talk about anything? Anyone from our transit providers, Dan or Todd? Anyone from AVI?
Todd, you want to go first, Todd? Okay, I can just have some real quick. We will be starting service area. We're starting to see more transportation down towards the Lewisburg area because of the invaluable operations and UPMC has some medical offices down in that area, so we're starting to get a little more headed down that way. And in addition, I'm probably able to pick a little more to coordinate with AT. In addition, we're probably in September to get July launch a campaign on the Spotify Ride application process. Out to the general public. We'll also identify sites where people can go, public access sites to the availability at so those are two of the biggest we're working on now. May have to report to it later on the service enhancement, but I'm not at liberty to really release it right now.
That's it. All right, thanks, Dan. Do you have anybody from the airport that would like to talk?
We really don't have anything to add.
Okay. All right. Anyone else?
Has there been any request for bus service to either Jigger out by the landfill or down to the Montgomery area with the new Amazon fulfillment center?
It doesn't appear Todd's been in the meeting anymore. I don't know if he. Okay. I don't see him on the guest list.
All right.
That's a good call.
Okay, everyone. Well, thanks for your time today. Our next meeting's coming up here in October. I think it's October.
I want to say the
17th.
Third week, yeah. Give me just a second.
Or is it? Monday, I think. 17th.
So it's not very planned for it.
Well, it could be the next day.
No.
That is fine.
Yep. No, it's 17th is coordinating committee. September 26th is technical committee.
So September 26th.
Yep.
Excuse me. Will be the next meeting. Appreciate you for your time. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Second.
I have a second. All right. Meeting is adjourned at 11:25 a.m. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day.
So I'm going to...